I actually agreed to do this when I was at the health department in Cowlitz County, Washington, and then since moved to the state. And it's been quite an adjustment. It really, I didn't think that it would be as hard as it is, but I really miss the local piece, so I'm kind of struggling a little bit. So what I hope to do today is to share a small snippet of my experience at Cowlitz County, at my attempt to do this work with very limited resources. And I want to talk about how I attempted to take the MAP work with the Washington State Standards work. And Washington likes to be a little different, and they don't use the National Performance Standards, which some of you may use or may be familiar with. So it was a little bit of a challenge because MAP likes to use the National Performance Standards. So it it was some creative thinking. So I'm just going to talk about a couple of the assessments and some of the outcomes of that. So just briefly, just Washington state history, for those of you that are interested, just to give some context. In 1993, there was a piece of legislation that basically said the Department of Health is required to develop a public health improvement plan. So this has been quite a process that they've gone through. And it required that there were performance standards that be developed. And also, they are linking, there's a piece in the legislation also that our contracts actually have to be performance-based. So at a state level now, it's an interesting kind of a looking at that about how we are trying to, because it's still a struggle, to get the right words in contracts at a state level to get to the locals to actually say you must be meeting these measures. So they did this by committee. Committees were formed with local, state, academia, a variety of different folks. They had a public health improvement plan committee. Standards were developed. They field tested those standards, and that was in 2000. They did a baseline assessment. So they actually came to each health department. The state contracted with an organization and came to each health department, and we had to show our wares. We didn't do so well. And then from that, they actually came back again and did better, because I've been through all three of those. And we're actually now in the preparation for them coming again. It's like, oh, they're coming. What happened between 2005 and 2008 was that there was some change happened. So we went from 5 standards to 12. And that sounds worse than it is. They added some things that probably really needed to. And training prior to this was all over the place, and now it's in one section, so it's better. Although it sounds worse. So really it is a partnership. I was a co-chair with somebody from the University of Washington on one of the committees. It's very much a work plan. So I feel really good about the process. So there are 5 content areas, and I'm going to speak from the 2005 piece, not the 2008. So there's the content areas that most of you might be familiar with, and then our governor, Governor Gregoire, likes to use the word plain talk. And so you might look at the common terms as maybe a plain talk version for just anybody who could see that, say, oh, okay, that's really what that means. So it's kind of your typical areas of health assessment, communicable disease protection, environmental health protection, community health promotion, and assuring. So it's that access to care piece. So Cowlitz County, it's quite a place. It's about 50 miles north of Portland, Oregon, and about 130 miles south of Seattle. Now it's about 100,000. When I was starting this process, and it's not done, there was probably about 92,000 people. This is kind of famous for Mount St. Helens, so it's very much a resource-based economy. It's fishing, it's timber, you know, it's kind of all of that good stuff. It's very white. It's pretty much Caucasian. So it's an interesting place because when the mountain blew, It devastated the community. And then you had the spotted owl, and then you had the energy crisis. So for a long time, this community had the highest unemployment rate in the state. And it's not particularly a community that values education, because you didn't need education. You would go to the mill. My grandfather worked at the mill. You're going to work at the mill. So when the mill started closing, it was quite a challenge. So what happened when I started MAF, I had actually learned about it at a NACHO conference and thought, well, this sounds fun, and partnered with a community organization called Pathways 2020. And Pathways 2020, there might in some of your communities have something similar to that. It's actually based in the Economic Development Council, and they're really all about community health improvement. So we made a really good team. They had on their board the head of the hospital, the head of the local college. There was a county commissioner who was my boss, who's also part of our board of health, who's also part of our public health advisory committee. So there's a variety of different partners that were part of this. They already actually had a mission and a vision very much devoted to community health. So it was really a great partnership. So when I learned about MAP, I thought, this is really a great process. And then I learned about the standards. And I'm kind of this person that likes to kill one bird, two birds, one stone. And, you know, because what I found, and why to me this message is really important to those of you who may have difficulty with this, is, well, I have to do contracts, and I have to do standards, and I have to do this. This is really a way that I tried to figure out how, when I do this one thing, I could also do this other thing at the same time. And it has a quality improvement kind of piece to it. So I think MAP provides a framework for practice, and the standards really helped to add additional guidance to that, if that makes sense. And what I like to do when I'm starting things is kind of just put everything in a pot, so to speak. So I did lots of great tables and said, well, what do I have already? And so Paul Yeomans and I really spent a lot of time trying to figure out, what do we already have that's already been done? So we really used that existing partnership a lot. They had resources to bring to that, because they were economic development, that I didn't have. And so collectively together, we figured out, of those four assessments, what had been done, what else do we need to do. The one thing that I learned along the way is document, document, document. It was, and I will say that at the end, a lesson learned. When you're doing MAP and thinking you're doing this great stuff and having community meetings and getting involved, and then they came to measure me, and I didn't have an attendance list of who was there, and I only partially met the measure. I was devastated. So it's just those silly things, if you're trying to do both, try to figure out what is it that I need to do and make sure that you cover it all. So this is my attempt at kind of showing, on one side you have a Washington State standard requirement, not the national, and the MAP assessment. So by no means are these all of the requirements for the Understanding Health Issues or Assessment Standard, but it's just kind of a snapshot. So basically, you know, it's that monitoring the health status. You have to identify a core set of health indicators in your community. You have to be able to do surveillance. You have to take that data out to your community and let them know about it and involve them in the process. And then you have to take that data and develop goals based on, you know, best practice, and evaluate those goals. So what we did was, I was lucky enough to be one of four counties in the state that managed to get an epidemiologist with the FEFR funds, the Public Health Emergency Preparedness, and I used her to the full extent possible. And we identified the 11 data categories that actually the Public Health Foundation a number of years ago had the Community Health Status Indicators website that was very good, that's no longer there. So I used those 11 categories, and I'll show you that. And we used the leadership of Pathways 2020 as really our voice of the community. So we did that in a variety of different ways. We had focus groups, we did surveys, we put stuff on our website, we did lots of stuff where we tried to let the community know. Also, one of the things that Pathways 2020 does on a probably every 2 years is they do a community report card. So what happened is we used our resources of our epidemiologist, and we worked together to develop this report card that was quite painful, but it was good when it was done. But it's one of those processes, you know. So one of the things that came out of this assessment, as well as local public health assessment that I'm not going to speak to, was that people, I actually discovered that 55 agencies in the community also needed to do community needs assessment. And we started going, this is crazy. We're all asking each other for this data. And so we then developed a community-wide data repository where we placed our data there. So that was a good thing that came out of that. So these are the 11 categories that that are coming back up again. I'm so excited. And then this just, I'm not sure if this is font four, but I just wanted to show you what we actually did was just created a data template. And there's another piece that goes with this where the data source is. So we, you know, would know, you know, of course it came from CHARS or BURFIS or a variety of different places. We went back to 1997 because I wanted to be able to have a trend line. So some of it was difficult to get, but some of it wasn't. So this is just kind of what we used internally. And then, of course, we created beautiful graphs and all kinds of things to show the community. This wouldn't be something necessarily we'd show them. But the one piece about this, just tying to quality improvement, that's also a requirement of the standard, is that we identified core indicators. But particularly around communicable disease efforts, we also then identified 12 performance measures, different than indicators. And what happened as a result of this process is that we met as a staff on a quarterly basis and said, so how are we doing on reporting and, you know, a variety of different things that we're required to do. And we actually, it was quite a process because we got better over time of, you know, being able to report on a timely manner, you know, all of those different things that we had selected. So these are the fun and kind of scary results that we had in our community. We have a high rate of pregnant women with a lack of high school education, you know, high rate of women on Medicaid, smoking, low rate of educational attainment, and a 24% tobacco use. The state now is at 17%, I think. We're like fifth in the nation. Go Washington, you know. So we have a high rate of youth substance abuse. There's a 68% obesity rate. High rates of STD. We are like the number one county for gonorrhea and chlamydia. So proud. And there was really not a lot for people to do. I mean, you know, they fish and, you know, that kind of stuff, but there just wasn't. So, yeah. And the one thing also is that when we did a lot of the work is that community members didn't feel safe. They didn't feel safe coming out of their homes. We learned about, yeah, I want to go for a walk, but there's all of these dogs that are running rampant and the sidewalks that, you know, were in disrepair. And there was really a lack of trained staff for jobs. So another assessment that we did was community themes and strength. And what we did was a quality of life survey. Hi, Rita. where we actually had 1,004 respondents in the community. So that was a pretty good response rate. And we asked a variety of different questions about what was important to you in your community, what were you most concerned about, a variety of different things. So from that, of course, we did that in partnership with Pathways 2020. And we I stole something from what Chicago did, because when we mailed out these surveys, we actually attached a little cup of tea. And did that, and we got a really good response rate with folks who was like, here, sit down, look at this. We put it on our website. We did a variety of different ways to get response. We gave them to the board members. They took them to meetings. We did a variety of different ways to get this. So, again, this helped to kind of build into our community data repository. We had really active involvement. And remember, along the way, when you're doing this, you're documenting. what's going on to be able to demonstrate we've done this assessment, here's what's going on. So that helps to meet your standards as well as kind of identifying what does the community really need and want. And from that, I feel so, you know, when I was listening to the session at 8:30, what really was good for me is the validation of hearing what this process did for me is being able to go through a process and say, this is what our community needs. And so when you're trying to get grants or you're trying to, you know, sell political folks, whoever that is, you have this really solid set of data that people are behind you on and saying, here's what we've identified and this is what we need to do. So that feels really good. So all of this data then kind of went into our report card. We actually then, based on what came out of this, is that we set prevention priorities and we developed subcommittees. The one thing that also came out of this for me, being the director of the health department, is that when I started, the local board of health was not meeting on a regular basis. So then I started meeting with them quarterly. So this was my way to just give them tidbits along the way of, here's what's happening, here's what we need to be doing. And because one of the commissioners was on the public health advisory and on the pathways board, it really helped to increase their knowledge level of what was going on. So this was something that was very, very troubling when I got this. This came out of the quality of life survey. So do all residents perceive that they can individually and collectively make the community a better place to live? 47% of those 1,004 respondents said no. I was very sad because you want people want to be connected, they want to know that they can make a difference, and here you have this group of people who were saying no. So we used this information to help people to make a connection. We use this a lot in a variety of our different works. In one particular community in the county, and there's like five cities, it's small, we actually took this information and formed, and we actually, in concert with this work, we did appreciative inquiry. We also did asset-based community development. So we kind of, you know, that's the beauty of MAP is you don't have to just do those four assessments. You can add different things to it. I also was then in partnership with our Division of Alcohol and Substance Abuse folks, so they had some prevention funds. And the outcome, just briefly, is that we formed a coalition of community folks. We were really in the back. They wrote a very successful $5 million grant, and they're doing some pretty cool stuff in this community that all came out of this. So, and the outcome is they then, because we just did this again, and there is a difference in that. People are starting to feel more connected. Excuse me. So this is just one of the report cards they did. So you can see the areas. That's really part of the Cowlitz County Pathways 2020 Board's vision. So these are the areas that they felt like if they addressed, which is a lot, they would make an impact on community health. So this is just a strategic issue relationship diagram that I don't know if it came from San Antonio or they just used it or everybody used it, but it's wonderful because I like it. It just kind of takes all of the different data, and I actually added other things that we did that you kind of go, what is this all telling you? And from that, then that's where with your community you can say, well, this data, it's all really pointing to we need to really work on encouraging healthy lifestyles. So just the piece then about putting this into action is that because of all of this work that we did in partnership, and because one of the big pieces that came out of this was that we really needed to look at the lifestyles piece of what was going on. We really actually needed to deal with economic development. That was another priority because of what was going on in the community, but this also was. So we took all of this data, and I managed to write a successful grant, and that was kind of the beginning. So we got $50,000. We then contracted with Pathways 2020 to do part of that work. So we actually did it together. I had a staff person and then Paul, a director, so we did that together. We had an amazing kickoff dinner. We had over 100 folks from the community, which is big. Probably doesn't sound like that from other communities. where we did a lot of brainstorming about what do you think we should do. We got great ideas. We formed a subcommittee out of that, which is that Healthy Lifestyles Coalition. I actually managed to get some funds from Kaiser Permanente, so we have this great website, because one of the things people said is, I don't know where to go to do stuff. You know, yeah, I want to go walking, but I don't know where to go. So we partnered with Kaiser. We did this whole marketing. We have this cute little blue guy, and he's on the move. And people really kind of got around this, and it was a really good thing. And they actually just recently received a Trails grant, so they're working, so they just keep going. They keep expanding. So just lastly, I think it is an ongoing process. It, like, never stops, and that's good, because that's kind of all part of the quality improvement thing. And one of the things that I learned is, you need to make this information available as soon as possible, not wait. As soon as you're ready to release, because people want to know. When they're filling out a survey, they want to know, well, what does that mean? And again, document, document, document. I mean, I think all along the way, if you're going to try to do this, you know, so my little story of what I said was, when they came to measure me and I didn't have the list of the people who were at the meeting, I couldn't demonstrate fully that I had community involvement. And if I'm trying to meet that measure, I can give them a great PowerPoint. And they said that. These are great PowerPoints. Who was there? Oh. So that was kind of a learning. And because the group is not static, you have to continuously orient people and keep re-educating them. And the organizing success piece for us, what we did that I probably would have done differently, because we had an existing group that was already there, we probably skipped and didn't spend as much time on that particular piece that we probably should have. And I think it could be done with limited resources, but probably not best. But it can be. And I think the beauty of this is that you can do what you can do. You know, you don't have to do everything. And then I really feel like this process, it raised the visibility of the health department in the community. We collaborated, and it provided credibility for us going after and getting more funds just by going through this process. That's it.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Bright and cheery. I don't know how late everybody was up last night, but I wasn't. Unfortunately, my wife is here with me today this week, and she was down at the Indian Museum and twisted her ankle by stepping off the curb, so I was babysitting with her a little bit last night, so we didn't do a lot of traveling around. I'm really happy to be here today to talk to you about using the operational definition metrics to assess a local health department's internal capacity, and a summary of results as to where we are in Scott County, Iowa, right now. And just to give you a little bit of a background, I've been the health director for Scott County for about 25 years right now, and we have a real identity crisis as to where in the world is Scott County. We're called the Quad Cities, and we're 170 miles west of Chicago and 170 miles east of Des Moines, and we're right on the Mississippi River, right on Interstate 80. But if you go around and you tell people that I'm from the Quad Cities, they kind of look at you with glazed eyes and as such. And the real troubling factor is that there's really five cities in the Quad Cities, so how we ever got to four cities, I don't know. We are the farm implement capital of the world, though, which is quite interesting. It's the home of John Deere, and we went through some troubling times back in the 80s when the farm crisis hit, and we had Case and International Harvester and a number of other entities there, and we certainly had to change our lifestyle and as such back at that time when the farm crisis did hit. And we do have the Rock Island Arsenal, which sits right out in the middle of the Mississippi River, which employs about 8,000 people, and we have Alcoa has a huge plant there. We're still in the Quad Cities. But in Iowa, if we take, we're at about 162,000 people in Scott County. Davenport is the major town of about 100,000, and Bettendorf is the second town that's about 35,000 people. we are in Iowa, one of the urban counties in a rural state. We're the third largest county in Iowa, next to Des Moines and Cedar Rapids. And actually, it's a really nice place to live because the cost of living is reasonable. And if you like the big city life, you can just go right off to Chicago and do all of the things that you want to do there. So at any rate, that's a little bit of a background with regards to Scott County. Let me talk a little bit about the process that we went through, and let me give you a little bit of history. Back in the early 90s, as it was talked about, as Liza said to begin with, I've done a lot of work with Nate Show through the years and been involved on the board and been pretty interested in all of the types of activities that went on. We, back in the early 90s at our health department, we pretty much went through the APEX process to look at our internal capacity. And we also, that was I think in 1992, and then in 95 we did our community assessment with the APEX tool. And subsequently we've updated that and we've done a number of strategic plans too. Our county health department and philosophy has been population-based ever since it was formed back in the late 60s. We've never provided a lot of direct services, but if our Board of Health philosophy is that if we receive dollars in, if there is an entity out in the community that can provide that particular service, we're going to contract out. And that's what we pretty much have done. We have a health department with about full and part-time, about 50 individuals. We provide a broad number of activities and have about five different service areas within our department. We have what we call our community relations and information and planning section, or affectionately known by them as CRIPS, that do all of our community relations. They do all of our, we have four public information officers within the health department. And they are overseeing all of our planning activities and our grants that come in and out through the department. We have an environmental health service area. We have a correctional health service area. We provide, that's the one direct service that we do, we provide the correctional health services in our county. We were asked to do that by our county board of supervisors about 9 years ago, and that has probably been the biggest headache that we've had. It is not an easy area to service. You're working with a sheriff's department where your philosophies run parallel. They're in a public safety mode and we're in health and human services, and working together is not always the easiest task. We do have a public health safety area in which we are involved with our preparedness. We oversee emergency medical services activities in our county too. And we also oversee the medical examiner. Some areas, that's the county coroner, but in Iowa, you have to be a physician to assume that responsibility. And then we have our clinical services area where we do immunizations. We have lead prevention. We have our STD clinic. And unfortunately, our county is the highest rate of STDs and gonorrhea in the state of Iowa. So I don't think that that's a good distinction for both of us. But at any rate, so we are a wide and varied health department. We have four physicians that are also under contract with the department to provide not only being a medical director, but a correctional health director, emergency medical services director, and, as I said, the medical examiner. So what we decided to do is that we had last completed our last strategic plan in 2003, and we've accomplished most of the things in that plan. And we decided that it was time for us, it had been about 15 years, to really go in and do another assessment of our internal capacity. So we brought together 16 individuals from within the department through all of the service areas, and also individuals that were new with the department and some of our individuals that had been at the department a number of years. So we had a pretty good cross-section there. We brought in all of our management people, our coordinators. We brought in the frontline staff. And we brought in our resource people. Now, we call our data entry, those sorts of individuals, we call them resource people within our department. And so the decision was made that we were going to utilize the operational definition metrics as an assessment tool. obviously my going to NACHO meetings through the years, I was very well aware of what that tool was all about and all of the interesting discussion that has taken place over the years. The other key piece is that I want to say in the audience here today, I have Janann Wunsch-Smith, who is a consultant that's been working with our department for about 5 years now, helped us with our strategic plan 5 years ago and has been working with us in things like team building and regarding teaching, helping to relay the essential services to our staff. That's another interesting piece is that, just as a little bit of background, we work very closely with all of our staff people through their orientation as processes to what the essential services of public health are all about. And we actually have every staff person within our department is responsible for a monthly report that internally is compiled and it comes out as a director's report that goes to the Board of Health each month. But each staff member has a template of the essential services and they're to look at whatever they specifically do within our department and report out on a monthly basis as to how they relate with the essential services. Early on in their orientation, when they start with the department, I sit down with them for an hour and I talk about the essential services and we talk about how to fill out that particular report. I won't say it comes easy to them to begin with, but if you step back and you think that whatever your particular job is within the department and how does it relate to monitor, to diagnose, and each of the essential services, it gives them a better picture of what they're all about within the department and how they fit into the department as a whole. So at any rate, we brought together 16 individuals and decided to go through that particular assessment. Obviously, we're looking at our internal capacity and we wanted to look at the skills and related components necessary to perform the 10 essential services. And you can read with those particular areas that we did talk about at any rate. Okay, what we did is we had a two-day period of time, an afternoon and the next morning, which we brought all 16 together. We sat in our conference room and we went through the tool. And we had them that one afternoon to each go through that tool over that three-hour period of time and fill out that assessment. That was not an easy task for our staff people. I think they felt that it was very difficult, and at that time we didn't really talk a whole lot about the tool and the different pieces, but we went through the tool and we asked them to score according to their feelings. We utilizing the National Performance Standards scoring template, we asked them to go through and to take each one of the metrics and to score it either a 1, 2, 3, or 4. And you could see that a 1 would be a clear need for increased capacity, or a 4 would be a high level of capacity in place. So that's the process that we went through that particular afternoon. The next morning, we came back with our consultant, and we walked through each one of those metric pieces, and we asked individuals, do they understand what they scored and as such? And so spent the morning doing that. Then we had the results tabulated, and basically we tried to look at our department from a standpoint of what do we think our strengths are and what do we think are areas needing attention, okay? And by going through the metrics, we looked at about 150 areas where we felt that we looked pretty good and felt pretty strong about. And then there were another 53 areas that we thought might need possible attention. And we used our cutoff point at 60% or lower. This was adding all of the scores together and dividing by 16 and coming up with a score. And we found that we had 53 topic areas that we felt needed further attention. Okay? Okay. As far as our results in looking at the essential services, we feel that we do a pretty good job, our staff did, of protecting people from health problems and hazards, or essential service number 2. We felt that we do a good job with enforcing our public health laws and regulations, and most of the enforcing comes in our environmental health service area. and we felt that we did a pretty good job of maintaining a competent public health workforce. We've been spending a lot of time working with the University of Iowa, came out of our last strategic plan, of looking at the workforce that we have in place and putting in place a mechanism for them, individuals, to do a self-assessment through the learning management system through the University of Iowa. And so we felt that that was a particular area that our competencies were better than usual. The areas that we thought that there were gaps in capacity, and we've listed eight of them, they kind of fell into eight kind of categories right here, and I'll just go through them briefly. I don't know about in your areas, but data is always an issue, and how we collect it locally, how we get it from the state of Iowa used to have a FACET system which we gathered data from. They disbanded that a couple of years ago, and our ability to get good data from the state of Iowa is not in place right now. We felt that we needed work on culturally competent health information in education, health literacy, how we look at special populations. As we work through our preparedness activities now, special populations is a huge area that we need to be working on. But just in general, how I didn't say earlier, we're a county of about 92% white, about 6% African American, and 2% Hispanic. Interesting, in 3 and 4, I'm a relationship person, and I believe in relationships is how you get a lot done in your community. And some of the things that when we worked on our community assessment in years previous, community stakeholder involvement and alignment with our external local public health systems partners has been a very important area. In Iowa, we have what we call accountable government that's come into play, where when you receive your grants in, the amount of work that we have to do with those grants, and I'll call it some micromanaging that takes place, is more than ever. And we are spending a lot of time micromanaging more of our contracts than what we used to, and that's really taken some of our people away from what they do best, working out in the community. Policy was another area that we looked at, and I don't know about where you all are, but it's kind of a hit-and-miss, helter-skelter type of a process of, as we look at legislative type of issues, whether they're local, whether what's going on in the state legislature or what's going on a national level. We don't have a real good, firm policy in place as to how we respond and as such. So that was determined to be a weakness. Evaluation and program planning, we do a lot of it, but I think the feeling was is we need to get a lot better at it and do a lot more of it. Obviously, as we move towards accreditation, that's going to be a very important piece. And I would venture to say the evaluation programs that we have and what we do internally in our staff is as good as anybody in the state, but we know that our staff felt that we still can do a better job. And I think we have something like 33 different programs that we're involved with in the county. Access is an issue, and there are numerous issues with regards to that, even in particular as we've identified, even in the direct service program that we do with our jail, but also out in the community with regards to individuals access with Medicaid or Medicare. And then the old bugaboo, anytime you look at the essential services, what does research really mean? And we tend to think that we really don't do any, but in effect we probably do more research as we look at what we've done with our workforce competencies and actually with what we're doing right now is kind of research-based, but staff doesn't look at it that way. So with those particular areas, and I would tell you we're in an ever-fluid process too, we identified 8 goal areas that we thought that we wanted to work on as far as our strategic planning over the next 3-year period of time. And I've just pretty much laid out those 8 goal areas for you, and I would tell you that we have subsequently had another meeting where we're refining these goals and attempting to adopt some action steps and such, and so the process is an ongoing one, and we haven't completed it as of yet. We actually began all of this last spring, and it takes a while to synthesize all of the data, come back, take a look, schedule a meeting with all of our staff people that are involved, and set the particular goals that we need to do. So number one was that we wanted to develop and implement a local public health system data collection, analysis, integration, and distribution plan. We can do a better job locally, doing some things electronically. The state is in the process of developing a data warehouse, which is not going to be a short-term process, but we can do a better job there, and we're hoping to put some action steps together. We want to try to provide quality, culturally appropriate public health information and education to all residents in its jurisdiction. It's kind of interesting, as we've been doing more things in the jail, and the communication can be better, as I said, between law enforcement and public health. We're working on it, but it's interesting to see the information that they give inmates that's written at probably a 12th grade level or higher in some cases, and many people can't even read it or understand it. So there's some areas there where we're going to be doing some work. We want to do a better job of engaging our community stakeholders and partners in the design and implementation of health promotion programs. So that's an area we want to work on. We want to develop a formal communication and planning process for more actively working with those public health system partners. One of the problems out in our community, too, is that there's a lot of change going on. I was in an earlier session today. We're talking about the public health workforce leaving. Well, the workforce is leaving in general. Our health systems, our community agencies, there's new individuals in those positions of leadership all over, and it's a constant renewal process of having to get out and work with those system partners, because working together collaboratively is how you're going to get things done in your particular community. We want to have a plan for promoting public health policy in the local, state, and national level. As I talked about earlier, we think we can do a better job there. And we want to develop and implement an evaluation plan to assess programmatic impact and community population health and to measure consumer satisfaction. And we want to have a plan to assure access to quality care for all residents within our jurisdiction. And the last thing that we set out as a goal area was to plan to further develop our public health practice research in partnership with other local health system providers, universities, and state and national public health entities. Okay. We took the undertaking. We decided to go through those metrics. And what are the strengths of the process? From our perspective, staff involved have a much better understanding of the 10 essential services. And we think that that's really key, even though we do some of these other activities in the department. What was really interesting is by going through this process, we were able to validate our departmental strengths and weaknesses. We thought we had these strengths and weaknesses, but by going through that process, there it was in black and white. We knew what our strengths were, and we knew where we had our work cut out. The results provided the basis for our ongoing strategic planning. This is all going to be put into our next three-year plan. And indicators were able to be used in the development of objectives and action steps, and that's the process that we're actually working on right now. Some of the weaknesses from our perspective, from our staff, some of the indicators were difficult to understand. Even for me, as I went through it, I'm probably as familiar as others, but some of it was difficult to understand. There's a need for some definition and clarification of terms. In other words, this research thing is a huge bugaboo from our perspective. The length of the assessment tool, it's not quick, dirty, and easy. It takes time to go through it. We felt there was some redundancy with it. And we felt that, as we were talking about it, that there was no credit for the capacity of daily activities. In other words, our staff that's involved with program implementation and grant requirements. We didn't think there was enough credit for that. Okay, what are our next steps? We're utilizing the results in the development of that three-year strategic plan. We hope to be aligning ourselves and preparing for accreditation. In Iowa, we're like Washington. We like to do things ourselves, so we're not following the national standards. We've developed our own public health redesign group and standards, and I've been on the steering group of that, and I've been in charge of the workforce committee. You talk about getting darts thrown at you from left and right out there. Work in a rural state like Iowa, workforce is a huge issue of what the credentialing and such should be. So we have this public health redesign, and we think that by what we're doing here locally and with the operational definition will align us for not only locally, but as we move towards the national accreditation, and our goal is 2011. And the next step, the last thing there, is that we can reassess our departmental capacity following implementation of the strategic plan. So that's something that we intend to do also. Okay, and that's just my, I would tell you that all of this information in great detail is on the NHO website under operational definition. You can go to the state of Iowa, drill down, and it's there. So all of the strengths, looking at all of the pieces of it. So once again, I would thank Janann, who's here in the audience today, and because she's been a big help to us, and we are very happy with where we're going.
Well, thanks again to a wonderful group of panelists. We have time to open it up for some discussion and questions and answers. So, do we have?
Yes. So, yesterday in the opening session, the director of the CDC challenged the public health community to go beyond measuring outputs to measuring outcomes. So, I'm from Canada, so I'm not familiar with your assessment tools. But are the assessment tools either at the state level or the NHO assessment tool, if I got it right, do they address the outcome issue?
Well, first of all, do a quick differentiation that the operational definition is we typically just go to the health department versus national health performance standards have tools for state, local, and governance systems and mapping of community systems. So they're assessing two different things. As far as we go beyond health, I actually don't know the answer to that question. Great. I'm getting head shake. No. Sorry.
I guess what from where I sit, and maybe not the right answer, but I think there is an inherent expectation that when you do the standards, this is at least from Washington perspective, that you would do some of the similar things that you do with NAP, where you identify a course of indicators. From that, you involve your community. You identify what you should be doing, and you set goals, objectives, and performance measures and indicators different, and that you go through this process where you are able to actually improve outcomes. You know, and so going through that process, I don't know if that makes sense. So I don't know that, because I'm not as familiar with the national, but for me, I feel like that's what we're supposed to be doing. You're doing all of this because you're trying to improve community health.
Yeah. Let me jump in and add that the National Public Health Performance Standards, as well as a lot of the discussion around building the standards for the accreditation system, there's acknowledgement that that is a lot of that of what's in there, those measures, are process and capacity measures, because that's what's easiest to tell what's in place right now and to measure. But the idea is ultimately to show that there are connections with building a strong public health infrastructure and of the fact that this relates ultimately to health outcomes. And if you think back to what's been done in HEDIS and in some of the areas where there's been a lot richer and longer history of having credentialing and accreditation systems, they've been able to show those connections over time. And I think we need to get there in public health, but that's a place that we need to go. And with the National Public Health Performance Standards, we're at the point where we've had 4 years of this instrument, of these instruments being out in the field, and we're going to be doing some work looking at the data set and connecting that with health outcomes. But I think the troubling part is how do you identify, well, the fact that these communities are at a higher level of performance, is that what's contributing to the higher level of health outcomes, or is it the vast number of contributing factors, socioeconomic issues, demographic, that really contribute to that? And there's just so many contributing variables. So it's unfolding all of that and trying to pull it apart to really figure out, well, what's making the difference. And I think that's why there's just a lot that needs to go on. But
your office.
Yeah, and in fact, there's also a lot going on in public health systems research, really trying to figure out how can we make the connection between improved public health infrastructure, whether it's building the public health system as a whole or strengthening the agency itself, and the ultimate goal, you know, the prize at the end of the rainbow is, of course, better health status. And Heidi wants to say, add something to this, too.
I just want to add that Major is actually working on doing an evaluation of health outcomes from communities that give better tools, which is MAP, performance standards, whether or not you've done the format process or community development plan of other sorts, and using the community health status indicators data, because that data actually provides your county grouping. And so you can actually control for a lot of the externality factors. And so we're writing up an evaluation plan over the next couple of months, and it's going to be something that we're going to be actually putting in place. It's not so much to show causation, but something that's going to be difficult, but correlations between health outcomes and some of these performance improvement processes.
But obviously, an excellent question. Any other questions? The operational definition metrics and the events. Do you want to?
You know, Joanne, that may be a great question for you to talk about. She's so good. I want Larry, too. I think, the APEC internal piece, the little map, can you assess the internal capacity?
Yeah.
And then,
well, there's two parts to the APEC.
Right.
The internal piece, and then, which was, this is a further iteration of,
right,
of the original APEC.
I would add the APEX Part 1 categories, they address things like personnel management, financial management. A lot of the things that will ultimately be found in that 11th domain for accreditation, which is administration and governance, or something like that. And the 10 essential services, of course, relate a lot more to the public health activities that do relate a little bit to some of those APEX categories. There's, you know, on a community health assessment and public health services and environmental services, although that was pretty minimal and was a catalyst for developing PACE. But so the focus on the operational definition gets more at the work of public health itself, whereas I think APEX Part 1 was a little bit more, is the agency being run well?
Right.
And
that's a hard time thinking back to the original APEX.
Like the internal APEC piece, we need to look at performance as well.
Quickly mention, if you're interested in spending the rest of your day talking about public health infrastructure and improvement, there are a couple flyers outside telling you about some of the additional sessions today and in the next couple of days. The one that I just want to point out, the one that has the CDC logo, we did this specifically for the CDC booth, which requires CDC logo to be on it. We're not trying to take credit for other people's sessions. But let me tell you about the locations, just in case you're interested. In 45 minutes, there's going to be a session on performance standards, and performance standards as good policy. Performance standards as the valuable tools in shaping national, state, and local practice. And we've got Dr. Judy Monroe, who's a state health official in Indiana, speaking about how this fits into their state health improvement activities. Laura Landrum will be speaking about some of the legislation they've actually put in place in Illinois related to and how that fits with their use of performance standards and MAP at the state level. They've kind of adapted MAP to the state level. And then finally, and this relates to the data issue, Dr. Doug Scutchfield from Kentucky is going to talk a little bit about some of the preliminary findings from the version 1 data set. That's over at the Grand Hyatt. In Independence F/G. I presume that's a ballroom of some sort. But then directly after that, there's a second session on the performance standards, really focusing on the recent release of the updated instruments. That is back here in Renaissance Meeting Room number 3. There'll be a little bit more about those updated instruments, how they've been used actually in Kansas City, and how they can continue to be used for performance improvement. And then later this evening, there's actually a reception for those interested in the performance standards or other related programs. It says invitation only. Consider yourself invited. It's 6:30 to 8, somewhere here in the Renaissance, and I don't have that room number. And then on Wednesday, there's a session on the exploring accreditation, or on accreditation. And the executive director of the Public Health Accreditation Board will be speaking. That's over at the Convention Center in room 144B at 12:30 on Wednesday. The other interesting sessions to mention, actually tomorrow, on Tuesday, there are a couple sessions that are being sponsored by the Multi-State Learning Collaborative. Folks are knowledgeable about that. One is at 12:30. You can never leave the Renaissance because that is once again here at the Renaissance on this level in rooms 12 and 13. It's workforce development for accreditation and quality improvement. I think actually Washington State's one of the states being featured. So if you really liked what Sue said, you can go hear more about what they've done in Washington. And then there's another one at 4 o'clock, once again here at the Renaissance in meeting room number 4. And that's on quality improvement and just what's going on in some of the MLC. So there's plenty to learn, plenty going on. We have just a few more minutes, so any other questions come up? thank you all for your attention, and thanks once again to our wonderful community.